Attention Austin guitar players and bass players. Are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you, gang. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery, and you can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I've been talking about Jason for years. Why is that? Because I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years. Not only does he do the best job, but he has the best prices and the fastest service in town. Again, find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Not only is he doing an amazing job repairing and setting up guitars, he is now building guitars. That's right. He built me an SG Junior, which I have, and it sounds amazing. It feels great. It's the very first SG Junior he ever built. I've got a J. Scott Luthery SG Junior. You can go see him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Get a guitar built. Get your guitars fixed. Get them set up. It's time, man. They've been hanging on the wall all through COVID. Now it's time to get them out, get them fixed, and get out there and play. J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Let's get down.
You gotta open the vault.
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Hey, the vault.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host, and welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault, where we reach back into our vault of well over 1,000 episodes, pull one out, shine it up, and re-release it for you just in case you missed it or in case you want to hear it again. Gang, today we go back to episode 1173 from June 10th, 2022, where I talked to Grammy-winning Austin-based singer-songwriter and certified guitar hero, Eric Johnson. Man, we had a really great conversation. We actually did this via Skype when I was in my grandma's backyard. We have really great conversation. He was about to release two albums, two separate albums, The Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today. They both go across a lot of genres. You can find out more about these records at ericjohnson.com. We have a really great conversation about celebrating 25 years of G3 with Joe Satriani and Steve Vai, his major label records of the 80s and 90s, and kind of how he navigated his career like that. How cassettes are making a comeback. That's actually really funny because It's true. How he invented a language on guitar. Like, that's a really great part of the conversation. So without further ado, let's go back to episode 1173 from June of 2022 with guitar hero Eric Johnson. Let's get down. Doing, man?
All right. How are you? Where are you?
I'm in Houston. I'm at my grandma's house in the backyard.
Okay.
Hanging out.
That's
yeah. We've been doing some family hanging. My grandma just turned 99 the other day.
And wow.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting the sort of like dynamic though of family. But what's your family? You have a big family, or you have a?
Yeah, I grew up in a family of seven, my mom and dad, and five kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
What number are you in the five kids?
I'm the youngest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did any of them play before you did, or were you the first one to sort of take up music?
Well, my oldest sister played flute and piano, and then my other youngest sister, she played piano. The middle sister took piano lessons for a while, but didn't really stick with it. My brother and I started taking guitar lessons together, and he kind of dropped it. And I just kept playing.
Can I ask you a weird question? I'm in a band with this guy. I live in Austin, but I'm just in Houston visiting family. But I was telling a bandmate of mine that I was going to be talking to you, and he was like, "Oh, got to ask him about Jimmy Shade." Now, was that your first guitar teacher?
Yeah. Well, he after I took from Wayne Wood, who is a great guitar teacher in Austin. Yeah, Jimmy Shade taught me a lot.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is you're like a born and raised in Austin guy.
I am. I moved elsewhere for a couple of times, but mostly was in Austin.
Where did you move?
In late 70s, I went to New York City for a while. And then in mid 80s, I went to L.A. for a while.
Okay. It's pretty crazy. Both of those places seem they've always... I used to have a fantasy about living in New York until one time... It just struck me how much work it is just to go do something.
Yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked it there. It was a lot going on, a lot of opportunities. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like Texas. I'm kind of just born and bred Texas. So.
Can I ask you a question? When you went to New York, was that in the time when Les Paul was doing like his weekly residency?
No, actually, it was before that.
Before that? Okay. Did you ever get to play with him?
I did. I got to play with him a couple times and hang out and visit several times and see him play a number of times.
Wow. What does that mean to you? Like, is that something you've never forgotten, like being in that moment with that master?
No, it was great. He was very, very nice to me and very... kind of took me under his wing, and he was just very friendly to me. He actually came out one time I played in New Jersey near Malawa, and he came to one of my shows and came backstage and hung with us for a long time and just got to talk to him. It was awesome.
That's so amazing. What a great feeling. Well, man, I don't want to spend too much time in the past. I do want to talk about the Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today. You're putting out two records. Yeah, these are fantastic. And you know, it's so interesting. There's a Floating Through This World, which is like has even like call and response vocals, which is something I haven't heard in your music.
Yeah, that was something I kind of did, kind of Beatle kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a new tune that was one of the there's like seven new tunes on these compilations and the rest are older.
They're all
but Floating is one of the newer ones.
Right. It's interesting because there's a real, like, some of these songs have a real R&B vibe to them.
Uh-huh.
You know, which is really, it's interesting to hear you go into that space and your voice. I've always thought, like, I saw you play maybe the first time in 1984. And then my mentor is Mark Hallman, and I've known him since I was about 13. Yeah. And so he was always a big fan of yours. I know that you played on that Carole King stuff that he did.
Yeah.
Your voice to me has developed in this way where it's a lot more commanding than in the early days. Do you agree with
really?
That? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think it's changed a little bit. And I think I'm not really necessarily that great of a singer. I kind of get in my head how I want it to sound, and I just kind of keep working on it until I get there.
Yeah, I've always thought that you're, even on the Tones record, like when that came out, like on a song like Trail of Tears, like the urgency in your voice accents the lyrics of that song so much that I just always thought you had a real great character in your voice.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, man. So these songs, you were saying that some of them you wrote, but the rest of them, you have a vault of music.
Yeah. And usually whenever I record a record, I usually do like two records and then one, I kind of say, well, I don't know about this one. And I put one out. So I have a lot of extra stuff.
And did you produce this record yourself?
Uh-huh.
Is that your studio where you do the mini lessons?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty nice place. You even got like the glass behind you and everything.
Yeah, it's a total ground up correct studio with floating walls and floors and stuff.
Wow. So who all played on these records?
Tom Brecklein, drums, Roscoe Beck bass, Chris Marsh bass, Bill Maddox drums, Tommy Taylor drums, Kyle Brock bass.
Yeah.
Kevin Hall drums and percussion. Let's see, Ariel sang a song.
Yeah.
Who else? I'm trying to think. That might be about it that I can think of right now. Wayne Salzman played drums on some of it.
Awesome. You've played with so many great musicians, and kind of going through all of your history, I'd never heard of Mariani until I was prepping for this podcast. I'd heard of Electromagnets, and I actually went and listened to that stuff. Man, that stuff is like, it's really awesome.
The Mariani stuff.
Well, no, I didn't hear the Mariani stuff. I just read about it, but the Electromagnet stuff, I finally got to hear it. In research for this, I saw that you put the stuff up on YouTube. That stuff is really cool, man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of like when the fusion thing was going on. It was a time in Austin. There were a lot of fusion bands in that time, but it was kind of like they were doing the country rock or the fusion thing, you know.
Were there was more bands doing that in Austin?
Oh, yeah. 47 Times on Weight, Starcrossed, Passenger. Extreme Heat, or it was called Steam at that time. Yeah, there was a number of bands and they were doing that.
Was that Mitch Watkins was in Passenger?
He was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keeping all this history in my head, someday it's going to make it pop off. But it's also interesting because we're all so intertwined, you know, in that music scene in Austin.
Yeah. When did you come to Austin?
I moved there in 1984. With my mom, but then she died like the next year. I moved to Miami, but I moved back for good in 1991.
Okay.
Yeah. And I actually lived at the Congress House when I moved back there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so the one thing that I was noticing is that there was like this band phase, like with Mariani, like you were in a band. And then, like, Electromagnets, like, that was a band. And then, sort of chronologically, you were kind of guesting with these other artists like Christopher Cross and Carole King and stuff. When you ended up going out on your own and taking on, like, what made you go as a solo artist and not a band guy? Because one more thought on that is that just the little I've been around you in my life, you seem like a quiet guy and a shy guy, an introspective guy, which doesn't usually, like, that's not usually the character of the solo artist.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I think I would have been happy being in a band if there had had presented itself where I could write music and play and do my thing.
Right.
At the time, I guess I just kind of struck out on my own, but I would have probably been happy doing that if I had still had the same outlet.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy playing with Carol and also with Cat Stevens. I think the thing was with that, I think it's like if you play with somebody and they're able to utilize your talent, and that doesn't mean, you know, go crazy and play lead all the time, but just be able to add a musical dimension to it. It wasn't that Carol didn't want that. It's just she had so many irons in the fire and so many chefs in the kitchen that it really wasn't a place where I could really do my thing. And same with Cat, you know. And but I enjoyed playing with him. I think if I had been utilized a little more, like in the band Mariani and Electromagnets, I was really utilized a lot.
Yeah.
You know, do your thing, Eric.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you know, I could have very well kept playing in bands if that had presented itself, and maybe I just decided to, you know, okay, I'll just do my own thing, you know, but it certainly wouldn't have been anything wrong with being in some kind of band, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that Jay Podolnik was in Mariani.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
I also played in a group. Yeah, there's a group called Blind Melon too that Jay sang in with Roger Smith, who
that's right.
Who's now Tower of Power and stuff. But we played in a band together too.
He's always been such a sweet guy, you know.
Yeah.
I've always thought, like, it's real. I went to lunch with him a few years ago. It's probably like 10 years ago now, but he just called me up out of the blue and was like, hey, let's go hang out, what are you doing, you know.
Yeah.
He's a good guy like that. Yeah. So another question I had is that there's this sort of like, having seen you at that time and you know, people that I was around, like Hallman and people like that, were huge champions of you. And like when you got your first deal on Warner Brothers and all that stuff, I was very excited to see that. And I remember you were on the cover of Guitar Player magazine. And I think the title was like, who's Eric Johnson and why is he on the cover of our magazine?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Which was fantastic because I had gone to Miami, you know, and told all these people like, oh, you're from Austin. It was Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I was like, yeah, there's these other guys too. And then finally Tones came out. What I was going to say is that it's you're a guy that like invented, I don't know if you would say a language, but almost like a colloquialism, a part of a language on guitar. Like you can tell when it's you playing guitar. Which is a really difficult thing to do as an artist, is find your voice like that.
Well, that's a good point. But I don't know if it's that original. I just took a lot of aspects from people that I love and kind of made it my own thing. And then I tried to hone that into my own unique deal.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, it's pretty amazing, but I can only imagine how odd it must have been to be like in the major label system in the 80s. Like, when you did Tones, before, after you did Tones, were people like, hey, we need you to write with Desmond Child or something? You know what I mean? Like,
well, you know, yeah, it's a good point. And I think it's your attitude and your response to those situations. I think I had a little bit of friction and trouble with it because in retrospect, it would have been, I could have just gone, okay, yeah, let's, you know, try these different things, because everything, you can make any situation good if your attitude is, well, this is not exactly what I had planned, but we'll make it good.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Rather than, oh, that's not my thing, and then kind of buck the system. But I felt like with the Warner things, it took forever to find a producer. And when we went through them, I mean, a lot of them were like, you can't do instrumental music. Your songs are too long. You got to write lyrics for all of them. And you need to go heavy metal, or you need to do this or whatever. And we went through a lot of that. But, you know, we finally were able to kind of, you know, David Tickle produced it and did a great job, and we were able to put the pieces together. But, you know, interestingly enough, and then with the Warner thing, you know, they called me in the office after Tones and said, well, you know, you can stay here and make another record, but we prefer you to go elsewhere because we don't know what to do with you. And it ended up working out good because that my next record was the bigger record,
right.
You know, did better. You know, but it's just people have ideas sometimes what they want to do. You have to kind of negotiate with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those, it's the, what is it like the deal with the devil? You got to figure out how you're going to work it, you know?
But it just seems
like what you were doing. And I mean, luckily those people, when you went to Capitol, they were able to hear what you were doing and you were able to shine.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I actually signed with Denny Somach with Cinema Records.
Oh, really?
And he had a deal with Capitol. And so it was a subsidiary of Capitol. So Denny believed in the project along with Abrams. We made the record. And during the making of the record, Cinema lost their deal with Capitol. But Capitol had invested this money in me, so they couldn't decide whether to just drop the whole thing or to just continue.
Right.
And they said, well, he's so deep into it now, we're going to lose so much money if we just drop the whole thing. Let's just give him a little bit more to put the record out. So it defaulted onto Capitol. And when I originally went to Capitol with a record, they were like, they were kind of pretty lukewarm about the whole thing.
Right.
You know, they're like, well, you know, we defaulted with this record, we'll go ahead and put it out. But there was a guy named Jeffrey Shane that worked for Capitol, and he loved the record, and he wouldn't rest until he made the record successful. So I really pretty much single-handedly at Capitol, he's the guy, and he turned the whole thing around, and it did great. And then all of a sudden, Capitol was very proud of it. You know, typical record business stuff. You know, but just the way it goes. You know?
Yeah, but you seem like such a, even in your mini lessons, which by the way they're awesome, and I think it's amazing that you're putting them out there. And if there's any kind of donation that I go to some kind of food bank, there's. You seem to be a person that is so grounded and calm. Is that?
You know, well, I am. I don't feel as grounded and calm after the 2-3 years of COVID that I did. For some reason, I feel like I'm still trying to find my footing now because I'm kind of coming out of hibernation and stuff. But that definitely is my ideal and something that I like trying to strive for.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there was someone I wanted to bring up. Dave Scher is a friend of mine. And I'm astonished at his talent, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the time. And I remember seeing him somewhere and we were talking and I was like, just the fact that you were like, hey, come play guitar with me. Like, what an amazing compliment, you know, to him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great. He sings, he plays piano, percussion, guitar, acoustic. Yeah. He's a great guy to have in a band.
I saw in some of the videos, like there was one with you and Roscoe and Brandon Temple. I think it might have been from a G3 thing. And you had a keyboard player on those tours, right?
Stephen Barber.
Oh, yeah. I love Stephen Barber.
Yeah. He was in the Electromagnets, actually. But
that's
now he's
right.
Yeah. But he's a great composer. He composes for the New York City Ballet and does all sorts of orchestral work.
Yeah. Yeah, and what a brilliant, brilliant musician. Man, that must have been fun.
Yeah.
And this year is the 25th anniversary of the first G3 tour.
So it is.
You guys are all on the cover of Guitar Player magazine.
Exactly, yeah.
As far as songwriting goes, like, I know that some of these songs came from different times. Are you, like, do you have, like, do you write every day? Do you?
Not every day, but I used to kind of experiment around and see if I can come up with something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you write songs? Like, are you a person that writes a whole song in one sitting, or does that happen sometimes? Or do you just kind of like, carve them out?
That happens sometimes, but usually they're a process, and the best thing I can do is just kind of let them unfold as they naturally do. Because if I try to force it, they sound that way.
Right. You follow the song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a tough thing to do because I, as a person that likes to have control over what they're doing, I realize that when I let go and follow the song, it's all like Star Wars stuff. Like, let go.
Yeah.
Use the force. You know what I mean?
Right.
Let it flow
exactly.
through you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you're not going on tour this year for this?
No, not till next year.
Okay. But that's a long tour. February till October?
Well, no, it's February. It's like, it's about 2 months and then we take a break and go back out. And, yeah.
Have you not toured since?
March 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you in the middle of a tour when you came home?
I was.
Where were you?
Yeah. Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you ever get it?
No, I don't. You know, I don't know for sure. I got terribly sick on the way home. And it could have possibly been it, but I don't know. It was back before they had testing kits, and I called the hospital to say, hey, here are my symptoms, here are my symptoms. And they said, oh, it sounds like you don't have it. Of course, they later learned more that symptoms are varied.
Right.
So I don't know. I could have had it. I don't know.
Right.
But I don't really know.
I got it after vaccination. I was okay. But, man, that's a really like you're saying, you're getting it together coming out of that time. Like, you spent the time working on music, but how did you reckon with all of that psychologically? Like, how did you make it through?
Well, it was tough. I mean, it was so insular and spent a lot of time by myself and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, it definitely kind of changes your perspective a little bit. And so I'm still working on kind of re-leveling out.
Yeah. Well, it was so odd that it was not just this weird lockdown, but then also so much sort of pressure in society, at least American society, mm-hmm. for like the, you know, 10 months following or, yeah. you know, even more, yeah. but yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Like politically, yeah. socially, it was just this, just so intense.
Yeah, it was.
But I feel like there was some breakthroughs. I mean, don't you feel like maybe a lot of people, I know that woke is a term that people use, but I feel like there was kind of an awakening in the summer of 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you mean because of having to deal with a hardship, you mean?
Well, dealing with the hardship, and then also people were being locked down, and in sort of the wake of the George Floyd murder, and in all of those protests, there were a lot of people that even like me spent time learning what the actual problem was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like there was some positive stuff that really came out of that.
Yeah, I think it's true.
It's interesting because positivity is definitely like a theme and joy in these two records, you know?
Mm.
I feel like they're uplifting.
Oh, good. Well, that's kind of my intention.
Yeah. I've always, yeah. Were you, I don't know, is that your way of sort of like talking yourself down or like, you know what I mean? Like,
Well, I just figure it's an opportunity to try to make people feel good.
Yeah.
If they're going to spend the time listening to it, I just feel it's an opportunity.
Yeah. So when you go out on tour, are you going to take, who you taking out as your band? Do you know yet?
Well, it'll probably be Wayne Salzman, Roscoe uh-huh. Beck, and Dave Scheer.
Awesome. Dave gets some moments in the show and stuff like that. Is it nice to sort of have that sort of camaraderie guitar-wise?
Yeah, I enjoy his playing. And I also like the opportunity sometimes to play piano and stuff.
Yeah.
Let him play guitar. Yeah.
Did you play guitar first and then learn piano?
No, I played piano first.
Oh, you did? How old were you when you started playing piano?
I was 5 when I started piano.
Oh, wow. And you played the keyboards and stuff on this record, right? On these records.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had David Grissom on here, and I've had a couple of other guys on here, and I always get these, somebody's always mad at me after these interviews because we didn't talk about guitar string gauges and pedals and stuff. But hopefully you're okay with talking about life.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, you can always say that stuff's on the website.
So yeah. How do you stay connected to music? Like, how do you listen to music? Like, what?
Well, I like to listen to all types of music. And then sometimes I like to not listen to much, you know, just kind of take a break.
Yeah. But I was just wondering if you do like Spotify or if you still listen to records or CDs or...
I have records and CDs, and sometimes I'll listen to satellite radio in the car.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll stream something, yeah.
Is there anyone that you've heard lately, like in the last year, that sort of has inspired you in some way, like some new artist that's come out?
Some new artist? God, I don't know about in the last year. I mean, I'll probably think of somebody when we finish this. Yeah, there has been. I'm trying to think of.
That's all right. I was just seeing like what is getting different people. I just saw Japanese Breakfast on Saturday Night Live. I was watching the rerun yesterday. I really love that band a lot.
Are they good?
Yeah.
I haven't heard.
Really, really beautiful. And she wrote a book and stuff. I noticed that that your record's coming out on CD, LP, and cassette, as well as digital. But cassettes are back.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of a novelty thing, but the Blue Alon record company wanted to put out cassettes, so maybe people listen to them.
I have a friend that started like a cassette label, and a couple of artist friends of mine that put out both vinyl and cassettes. The cassettes outsold the vinyl.
Are you serious? Really? I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
And I saw. It's funny because you can kind of see those things. Do you know the store Urban Outfitters?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. A few years ago, you'd go into Urban Outfitters and there's like a whole like vinyl section. But now that's just one kiosk, and then they're selling like boom boxes with cassette players in them again.
Wow, they're back.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Can I ask you? You're known as having pretty discerning ears. What is your favorite sonically? What's your favorite medium of on listening to music?
Well, I love records. I mean, they sound so analog. They have a vibe. I spend a lot of time listening to music on digital, though. Some digital recordings sound great to me.
Yeah.
Some are a little harsh,
yeah.
You know, but I think it depends on the music. Vinyl just has a character and a vibe. It makes it kind of more experiential somehow.
Yeah, well, people can get these. I haven't listened to a cassette in a long time. I haven't had a cassette player in a long time, but I know that people do love CDs, but you your cars don't come with CDs, your computers don't come with CDs.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It's kind of being a way of the, I wonder if cars will start coming with cassette players again.
Well, I bet someone's making a car cassette player.
They probably are. Yeah, I bet they are.
It's probably a cassette player that stands on its own with a Bluetooth connection to your car.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Well, man, these records, The Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today, won't be out until July 29th, but you do have some singles out, Sitting on Top of the World and Love Will Never Say Goodbye. There was another question I wanted to ask you. I'm glad that I came across this. The gorgeous song, JVZ.
Did
you write that for Jeff?
I did.
Man, that is so sweet.
Did you know Jeff?
Yeah, I knew Jeff well. He's a fun guy, man. I loved him.
Oh, well, that's nice. Yeah,
he came out and ran sound and tour managed my band for a few days of a tour when our guy went out. And that was like 23, 24 years ago. But that was when I really became friends with him. He's a person that could make me laugh like howl with laughter.
Yeah, no, he was great. He was a great guy.
Yeah. What's a gorgeous tribute to him? Yeah. Really.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know that would mean so much to him. And just like, I love some of these songs I want to talk about that are so gorgeous on this record. Hold On to Love, which is just it's just an awesome jam.
Well, thanks.
Yeah,
thank
yeah. You. Yeah. Well, people can get out there and find you at ericjohnson.com. They can check out these singles. You have those, the oil light videos kind of things like from the 60s that
some videos have been really
cool like that. Yeah.
Yeah, doing that. It's been kind of fun.
Yeah. And people should check out anybody that plays guitar. Those mini lessons, there was one where you were talking about using the pentatonic, and when you're playing an E, you can play in F sharp, or you can play in C sharp. That just opened up my eyes. There was also a voicings one that you did that I was like, oh yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah, very inspiring.
Oh, well, thanks, John. Thank you, man.
Yeah. Well, man, I've really enjoyed talking to you. And
you too.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you again. I've seen you so many times. I was going through it in my head over the last few days. I realized that I saw Alien Love Child a lot. You had a residency at Antone's for a while with that?
Yeah.
I'm sure I went for like a month straight.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So what band do you play in?
I'm in a band called Skyrocket, but like in the 90s.
Do you sing in that band?
There's a bunch of us that sing. Trish Murphy, Darren Murphy, we all kind of trade the singer.
I've heard that the vocals in that band are just killer.
Oh, man. You know what?
Yeah.
When those guys hear this, they're going to freak out, dude.
No, I have heard that because, what was that group, Suede?
Yes. Yeah.
Is Skyrocket kind of like Suede, right?
Right, but we play a little bit more like super hits of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. Well, I've heard Suede, you know, and the singing they always had was really great. And I've never had a chance to hear Skyrocket, but everybody said, oh, man, you got to hear Skyrocket.
Their vocals are so
good. Yeah.
Well,
I'd love to come out to a show sometime.
Well, man, we would love to have you. But I know we did some stuff. I remember doing some New Year's at Steamboat where Stephen and Tommy and Will, Stephen Doster and Tommy and Will Sexton did their Monsters. And I remember you coming out and playing.
Oh, were they doing their Beatles gig or was it Will's gig?
I can't remember. It was so long ago. But I have to tell you, it's been a real pleasure watching you for so long, and it's just been a real treat. I'm glad to have been witness to you from before even Tones came out and stuff, and getting to talk to you now and stuff is a real honor.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for doing this interview.
Well, yeah, thank you for doing it. The book of Making, Yesterday Meets Today, they'll both be out July 29th. The singles, Sitting on Top of the World and Love Will Never Say Goodbye, are available now. Go to ericjohnson.com for all of your Eric Johnson needs. Thank you so much, man.
You got it. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I look forward to talking to you again.
I hope so. Okay, see you, Don.
All right.
Enjoy it. Okay. Bye.
All right, that was Eric Johnson. His albums, The Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today, come out on July 29th. Go to ericjohnson.com for all of your Eric Johnson needs. What a great, great conversation. I really enjoyed talking to that guy, man. What a nice guy. I think he's going to come out and see a Skyrocket show, so that'll be exciting. Eric Johnson, baby. Check out, I hope you like this song, Sitting on Top of the World. You can get out there and find it. There's some other songs available now. Get out there to ericjohnson.com for all of your Eric Johnson needs. I would like to thank his manager, Max, and his publicist for being so nice and setting all of this up, and for him being patient and me doing it at my grandma's backyard. That was crazy, right? And don't forget, gang, get your tickets for Zach Lloyd Turns 40 at Antone's Nightclub. That takes place next Wednesday, July 15th, 2022. At Antone's here in Austin. Go to antonesnightclub.com for your tickets. And gang, don't forget, when you're out there checking out antonesnightclub.com or checking out ericjohnson.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts. 2, sometimes 3 shows a week. You never know, man. From the vault episodes, share it. Follow us. Leave a rating. Let us know what you're thinking. Follow us on Facebook. How Did I Get Here on Facebook? And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Here's the rest of this song, Sitting on Top of the World, by the great Eric Johnson. Have a great weekend. Let's get down. Thank you.